Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
In the studio tonight, it's the authentic Lord Reverend Dr. Captain Kickass Buckshot Esquire, if you will, LLC. And joining me,
Nikki.
And Richie Rich.
Man vasectomized by mistake.
What?
That's our lead story for tonight. From RT of all places. The medical mix-up is irreversible, doctors reportedly told Jorge Bates.
What? Irreversible? I thought you could get those things reversed.
Up to 10 years.
There are, I believe, two techniques. One is reversible, the other is permanent. Or, if I'm wrong about that, then they just totally screwed up and they're like, yeah, normally it would be, but,
But we've got them in a jar over here now and there's no coming back from that.
An Argentinian man woke up in a hospital bed last week to discover that he had been given a vasectomy by mistake.
It's all Javier Milei's fault.
It's Bitcoin, damn it. It's Bitcoin's fault. The victim told...
This is what happens when you deregulate the medical industry.
No, because there are far worse stories... about, like, the VA, for example.
Oh, my gosh,
like, leaving a scalpel inside of a patient and then, telling him he's fine when he complained about it and came in for a follow-up checkup. And then finally they took x-rays and, like, oh, crap, we better open him up and get that freaking scalpel out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not even a bad one either. That's just, it's pretty run-of-the-mill.
Run-of-the-mill VA stuff. Yeah. At any rate, the victim told local media that he arrived at the hospital for a routine gallbladder removal.
That's not even close.
What's a gallbladder?
It like filters oils and like it helps you process oils and stuff.
Okay, so.
It's one of those organs that people will say you don't need, but you really do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good enough.
So, but yeah, it can act up and can get gallstones and stuff like that.
Right.
Typically, that'll happen in people with poor diet. So, if they're eating like very high fatty, high sugary stuff.
Okay. All right.
So Americans.
Yeah. So Americans. Okay. Yeah. Right. So that's why they're calling it. Oh, it's a routine.
Because it's common.
It's not supposed to be routine. It's not actually routine, but.
Well,
it's
this is
common.
Also Argentina. Okay. So
all right. Well, unexpected surgery left this man unable to father the third child that he wanted. So apparently he had two children already. Was hoping to have a third, but nope, not anymore.
Poor guy. I know the feeling.
41-year-old Jorge Bass arrived at the Florencio Diaz Hospital in Cordoba last Tuesday for the gallbladder procedure, but the operation was delayed until the following day. When he regained consciousness, he was told by a nurse that surgeons had assumed he was in for a vasectomy.
How do you assume that?
Yeah, why would you
assume
that?
Isn't it on the chart?
As the hospital never carries out gallbladder operations on Wednesdays.
Oh. Wait, okay, this is really stupid.
I'm just going to read this sentence again.
Worse than I thought it was.
He was told by a nurse that surgeons had assumed he was in for a vasectomy as the hospital never carries out gallbladder operations on Wednesdays.
It's like grade school lunch menu. Like Tuesday's vasectomy day.
Right, yeah.
Wednesday's gallbladder day.
Yeah, Thursday's meatloaf.
Yeah.
Right.
So
Friday's
you're
pizza.
You're on Wednesday, but the gallbladder day was yesterday, so we just assume you wanted the vasectomy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, don't like look at a chart or what the doctor or what the whoever.
This chart must be wrong. It's Wednesday.
Yeah, like gallbladder.
Let's not double check it. Let's just go with what we do on Wednesdays. How much into your routine do you have to be to pull that off?
Oh, man.
Is it a different surgeon?
Also,
like, I don't know how to do the gallbladder. I'll just do the vasectomy.
Those are two very different operations.
Oh, yeah.
So,
you would think the prep alone would be just...
Yeah. Well, so a vasectomy is... That's like a day procedure. I guess gallbladder might be as well, but for one, you go under like complete anesthesia, like asleep.
Drugs.
Yeah.
And then for one, I think you're awake when you get a vasectomy.
Well, he was knocked out because he woke up.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like this. There's a lot of things wrong here.
Well, they don't give you a lot of time once they put you under, though.
They're
count down from 10 and you get to 8.
You think there'd be some sort of prep? Because I know in the U.S., like it's standard practice that they're like, okay, you have to tell the surgeon, like, what are we doing today? Oh, we're doing that. You know what I mean? Like they have to.
Maybe he told them that on Tuesday, and then they made him wait a day.
Where is the gallbladder practice? It's the lower abdomen somewhere? Right side, left side,
No, I should know that, but no, I forget.
Is poor, so
not anywhere near the taint.
That's okay. What yes, I'm getting at is like
it's yeah, it's in the abdominal cavity, like, and that is an external organ.
I would assume that the prep you have to do to the body is different for the vasectomy than it is for the gallbladder.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the area that you shave and where the incision needs to get made and all that kind of stuff should be.
So you think
like
maybe he would have been like, why are you shaving my abdomen or whatever? Or, like, why are you?
aren't you shaving my abdomen? Right,
yes.
It was just a courtesy shave.
Now, it could be that the man goes, you know, clean shaven down yonder. And so, like, they didn't have to do any prep. That's possible, I guess.
That's his fault then, because they go like, well, he's shaved down there. It must be vasectomy day.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of the, is it called a stigma? That preconception, that prejudgment of a medical procedure in Mexico, like,
yeah,
you know, like how much of that is real or how much of that is just like because there's been a couple of horror stories that, you know, made the news and that kind of a thing. Like people in Mexico go to doctors and hospitals and have procedures done all the time. We never hear about it. They're fine.
Yeah.
Right? The people get by just fine.
Well, and that's the trade-off, man. Right.
Yeah.
You have to weigh that against how badly do you want it done.
Right.
So, yeah, there's Mexico and then there, you know, like it is, there obviously is a variation between different countries.
Yeah.
I was watching somehow. I get in all these rabbit holes on YouTube.
Oh, we're gonna judge you now.
I was watching street. I don't know what it's actually called. So street dentistry in India.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Where they were like, oh, you need a tooth pulled, and this lady just sat down on the side of the dirty street, and he like basically took pliers and ripped her tooth out of her skull.
Did he have her chug like half a pint of booze or something first?
Not even.
Wow.
No, she didn't even get any pregame, or maybe she pregamed before. I mean, I would.
Yeah.
So.
But it was really hardcore, and she didn't even, I mean, that woman was hardcore. Like she didn't, I think most like grown men would freak out, and she was just like, all right, yeah.
Having had a tooth pulled, it's ironic that that's all they do. Right, the American dentist will numb you first, but he still just goes in there with the pliers and wiggles it out.
That's true.
Like there's nothing more scientific about it in America.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'm gonna grab it and I'm just gonna keep pulling on it until it comes out. You ready? Like I guess
basically,
so.
Basically, we're gonna take this string, right? We're gonna tie
we're gonna slam the door.
Because we're talking about people having things removed, what about tonsils?
I think that's so unnecessary, but it's a common procedure for children, especially.
Yeah.
They get frequent inflammation of the tonsillitis, whatever.
Yeah.
So,
like, I still have mine.
And, I still have
but
mine.
But I'm like one of the rare folks from at least my peers in school. They all had them removed.
Yeah,
all my family had theirs removed.
I don't think they do it as much anymore. When you think of it, I think your tonsils are in the lymph family, so they do filter things out. I think all of our body parts are. I'm not a huge fan of removing body parts unless it's like appendicitis, it's about to burst, you know, you absolutely need to. I think we're born with all of our organs for a reason, and I think they have a purpose. But I do think in a lot of cases where kids were getting sick, I think there could be other less invasive like detoxification methods that would kind of clear out the lymph nodes.
Do you generally not believe in vestigial organs, like, across the spectrum?
Yeah.
Okay.
In removing them, right?
Well, I mean, vestigial means, like, unnecessary.
I think they're all necessary,
Well, but there are other animals within the animal kingdom that, through the evolutionary process, have unnecessary parts.
Well, do we know that, though? Like, you know,
well,
is it possible
that... the science.
Is it possible that...
No, I don't.
that these supposedly vestigial things... are used like one time and then that's it.
Maybe.
Right?
I don't know.
You know, like
again,
how,
like, depends if you trust the science or not.
How useless, you know, are these things?
Gotcha.
But like I said, I was saying earlier in the show, people will say that about your gallbladder.
Right.
You don't really need it. I think you do. And I think a lot of people who have had a gallbladder removed, they might agree with me because now when they try to eat a greasy hamburger, they're going to be in a lot of pain. So I like eating a greasy hamburger every once in a while, and I want my gallbladder to be able to filter it out.
But that toss-up is not whether it does something or not. That's whether what it does is necessary for life.
Right.
Right. Like, if you don't need it removed, then you ought not have it removed.
Well, and that's
most
like,
things aren't necessary for life. I mean, you could survive without a lot of your organs.
Yeah, I know.
Well, but then if you don't need to have it removed, you don't. But if it's acting up and it's going to cause further problems, you do.
Yeah.
One of my
one
of my former roommates got shot when he was in the military, and they took out one of his lungs, so he's walking around with one lung. Also a super chain smoker, by the way, which seems counterproductive, but you know, he was like, well, whatever. I die when I die. One of my favorite musicians, Les Claypool.
Yeah, Primus and the Chocolate Factory.
Primus, right. Yeah, he did
He
did a whole thing, and like quite honestly, it was like it's the worst musical thing Les Claypool has ever done since he made it famous. Like Primus is a far superior thing.
Was Primus. It literally was Primus.
The other guys are his backing band, right?
I mean, yeah.
So, but at any
rate, usually how it is.
I saw them perform live, and they decided to bust out a couple of these Willy Wonka chocolate songs or whatever, and they were
the Oompa Loompas.
They didn't fit with the rest of Primus.
Yeah,
if you're gonna do something like that, you should do your whole show as that.
It was their experimental phase.
I think his whole life has been experimental.
It has, and so he just kind of went a little further than he did before. And I think the popularity of that release is like one of their lowest like selling. And
maybe
Captain loved it. Or Gwar did it.
I enjoyed the
Gwar doing
Primus. See? Gwar in the Chocolate Factory. Now we're talking.
If only Odorous were here.
Yeah.
At any rate, this from The Hollywood Reporter. Willy Wonka immersive event leaves kids in tears. Quote, it looks like a meth lab.
I mean, yeah. Have you seen the movie?
It doesn't look like a meth lab in the movie. I mean, the Gene Wilder one is fantastic.
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't say meth lab, but definitely more like mushrooms. More psychedelic, yeah. Definitely some drugs involved in there.
What was billed as an immersive experience, seemingly inspired by Willy Wonka movies, turned into the fire fest of unofficial movie tie-ins. An immersive experience that promised to transport Willy Wonka fans into a, quote, magical realm, unquote, has turned out to be such an epic letdown that customers called the police.
Wow.
And compared the attraction to a meth lab. Okay, so first of all, if you're taking your kids to see something that is Willy Wonka inspired, that's supposed to be an immersive experience, why do you know what a meth lab looks like?
Because you've also watched Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Also, to compare it to the Fire Festival, I mean, that's pretty... Are you guys familiar with that?
I heard stories about it. I didn't really pay attention.
Yeah, it was...
What is a Fire Festival, Nikki?
It was a music festival.
It's FYRE, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was supposed to be like a really high-end music festival. And I don't know, whoever the producer was of it just really... I think it was kind of scammy where they sold a bunch of really expensive tickets. And then they were like, great, so now that we have the money, we're going to create this thing. But that's not really how a festival works. Like, you need to invest the money up front, create the thing, and then... make your money back.
Right,
yeah. So, or have money to invest or borrow it from the bank or whatever. But they did not deliver. So you have all of these really bougie, rich Los Angeles people showing up to the desert with very meager accommodations, which, so whatever.
I mean, have you seen the pictures in this article?
No.
Okay. It is very meager.
Yeah. The UK event was titled Willy's Chocolate Experience. Which, you know, says
in and of itself.
Yeah, that kind of sounds creepy, but anyways.
And charge customers $44 each. The attraction was not affiliated with the Warner Brothers movie Wonka, though the event's marketing came as close as possible to suggesting it was based on author Roald Dahl's creation. The ad copy invited fans to journey to a universe where confectionery dreams are brought to life that included... mind-expanding projections, optical marvels, and exhibits that transport you into the realm of creativity and wondrous creations and enchanting surprises at every turn.
If I wanted a Wonka experience, it would be the tour of the chocolate factory as in the movie, right? Like if you went and saw that, that would be amazing.
The event organizers apparently used artificial intelligence to generate promotional images that suggested a very high quality attraction.
I think Nikki's looking at the pictures.
Which looked just like the immersive and trippy Wonka-esque world that the ad copy promised.
I mean, this is really giving meth lab vibes. It's like the picture of the woman with the green like bowl cut wig.
The Oompa Loompa.
And maybe she was supposed
to be an
Oompa Loompa. She's
supposed
to be
an Oompa Loompa, but like it's obviously like a normal-sized human, right?
But she kind of does look a little cracked out.
Guinea pig to become father to 400 after breaking into female enclosure.
Oh, man.
Oh, congratulations.
They should pair that guy up with the Argentinian vasectomy dude.
This is the...
this is how you do it, homie.
This is what the insult that they levy, something like, that guy couldn't get laid in a women's prison with a fistful of pardons.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, man. That's awful.
Captive audience.
This from ITV.com.
Literally.
Staff at Hatton County World in Warwickshire, couldn't understand why they suddenly had 100 pregnant guinea pigs on their hands until they realized one of the male rodents had managed to escape his enclosure and infiltrate the female-only enclosure.
Nice.
Dude's like,
it's like summer camp.
He's like, if I'm going out, I'm going out FCCing.
Before they experiment on me again, I'm making my way over there.
Yeah. This reminds me actually of somebody I was related to, elderly type person, grandfatherly type. The grandmother had, passed on, and he ended up going into like a nursing home.
Oh, yeah. And it gets freaky in the nursing home.
Oh, man. He was like literally the cock of the walk, so to speak.
Yeah, you don't want to know what I've seen.
He was.
Audience does, though, so you want to share it.
He was the guinea pig in this story. Right.
I don't know if it's FCC friendly. I don't know if I can.
I mean, they're all guinea pigs,
water
right?
It down.
He's not inseminating hamsters.
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. Who knows? Who knows what kind of interspecies erotica is going on inside of the guinea pig farm?
Accidentally went into the gerbil enclosure.
Yeah.
I miss my donkey. Clerks 2, anyone? No?
Don't go to the donkey show in Mexico?
No, you have to have seen that movie to get
I did.
To get that one. Yeah. It was Kinky Kelly and the Sexy Stud.
And Kelly was a dude.
Sexy Stud was the donkey.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway. They noticed that the exhausted father-to-be, now nicknamed Randy.
Nice.
Had lost a little weight.
Stressed out.
They do say that,
stressed out or overexercised.
They do say that intercourse burns many calories. Yeah. It's a fine form of, exercise. They noticed he lost a little weight, but did not realize why until they discovered he was actually a male rodent being kept busy in the wrong pen.
Oh, so he was already with the females. Okay.
He just walked around. He was like in drag in the female enclosure, just pretending to be a chick the whole time.
Usually it's pretty easy to tell with the rodents.
Is it?
Once they mature.
Yeah, okay.
They have...
I've never kept rodents as pets.
Their testicle to body ratios are pretty... Okay. It's pretty high.
Yeah. It's a visible difference.
Visible difference.
Doesn't shrink with more activity as you release some of it? Because if he's banging 400 of them, and then like just
they said he lost some weight, so
hiding in the sawdust when the scientists come around.
Yeah. Maybe the ladies were all like protecting him, like
they're like, this is our guy.
Yeah, the animal.
This is our guy.
The animal park, which he's the only one, right? Like he's the Highlander of what are these gerbils? Yeah.
Guinea pigs.
Yeah, he's the Highlander of these guinea pigs. Right, there could be only one, and he's the only one. And they're like, no, don't take him away. The animal park, which already has 300 male and female guinea pigs, is now readying itself for a population boom in the next few weeks.
Do they birth more? How many do they birth at a time?
It depends, but usually a lot. Okay. It'll at least be like four, maybe.
Okay,
four,
so it's going to go from 400 to like 2,000 then.
Yeah.
I think there's a pretty big range. Like it could be anywhere from like 1 to 6 probably, maybe even more. I don't know.
Let's just say 3
all right.
Each. And how many do we say? 100. So it's another 300.
And they're all
on
related.
On top of the 300 that they already have. So.
And now they're all related.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's going to be some incest going on.
I mean, maybe.
In that guinea pig cage.
They're all half siblings of some kind.
Manager Richard Craddock said, one of our male guinea pigs managed to find his way into the female enclosure and had a very good time by the looks of it.
It was some disgruntled employee. I'm just going to set you in here, little guy.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Maybe they were just gruntled.
Okay.
We suspect a child may have placed him back in the wrong pen by accident after stroking him, or Randy may have somehow broken out of his enclosure to get the females. So they don't know, is okay. What they're saying. Yeah. They're like, we think maybe somebody moved him, but maybe he got in there by himself. We don't know.
How long was he in there?
That's a good question.
Was this like
enough to get like 100 of them pregnant?
Well, but there's like one night of passion, 1 week of passion.
Yeah, how
I think they're pretty fertile.
How frequent can a guinea pig, you know, do the deed, you know, in a day, right?
Has science tested this?
I don't know. Are you calling the science?
Yep.
Isn't there a breed of like mice or rabbits or whatever that just do this until they die? Like that's their way out?
Mork calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Mork calling Orson. No
Mork. Mork and Mindy? Hands.
Okay, all right. Pam Dauber, Inner Prime. Hmm. Anyway, we believe that the newly named Randy could have impregnated up to 100 female guinea pigs.
Okay.
Which have litters of about 4.
There you go.
So if you do the math, we could be expecting quite a baby boom.
I'm glad we don't have to do the math.
I believe this is Simon in Tennessee. Simon, you're on Free Talk Live.
I thought you were going to segue with the Simon Says.
Yes.
I should have.
Simon Says, let's have a great time on Free Talk Live.
There
tonight.
You go.
How are you guys?
Yeah, Simon Says, go ahead. You're live on the air.
So I wanted to say how much the show meant to me. For years and years, I've listened, especially this last few years when I worked third shift as a tractor trailer driver, which I've been driving for 14. So the show, I think since 2009, I've been listening to Ian and Mark, and I used to call in back in the day. And it really is true what Ian said when he was in jail, allegedly the first time. Somebody like Ian called in. You'll have to ask him if you haven't heard that story. But he said it was nerve-wracking and kind of gave him anxiety to call into his own radio show, he said. So it is like that, and so I haven't called in a long time. But I really wanted to say, you know, I've been praying for Ian and really hope that he's able to get out of jail and a miracle happens there, and hopefully we can get a pardon or something happens for him. You never know. It happens from time to time, right?
Yeah,
because the restitutions are outrageous.
Oh yeah, the amount of money that they've raped him for already that he can never get back, even if he wins an appeal, is just staggering. Like money they had no hand in earning, no hand in acquiring. You know, the only saving grace of any of this is the way Ian went about doing it was he had mentioned even in court, it's like, if there is to be any sort of fine or anything like that, I want the money to go to the individuals who were scammed. I don't want any of this going to the state.
But even the individuals that were scammed defrauded Ian,
right,
by providing him false information.
Right.
Yeah.
And may or may not be in with the state.
Right.
Well, they're definitely in with the state.
So right. While the state still took a big chunk, at least, you know, there's a positive side of this, which there really isn't, at least, you know, he got that wish. So,
yeah.
Simon, thank you so much for like listening to.
I had one more thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just saying thanks for listening to the show, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I know you have to go quickly, but I told the screener there that I had something to ask for Nikki there. And how are you, Nikki?
Good. How are you, Simon?
Oh, good. Have you ever seen the movie Dumb and Dumber?
I have, yep. It's one of the few movies I have seen.
You want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
I love the different jokes.
I'm not doing a lot of
radio. I tell jokes all the time. I don't know how well this will go over, but I don't know if it's from the way you say exactly and other. I can't remember the exact words you say, but just the way you have a speech. I've been joking with my friends, and I said, you know, if my wife had an untimely death and your husband had an untimely death, what are the chances of a guy like me and a girl like you getting together, you know?
One in a million.
You're telling me there's a chance. So that's just what I wanted to say to everybody.
That's funny.
Well, I'll try to call back in again sometime. I got to go in here and see family and all at the independent living and everything. But thanks so much for taking my call.
I do comedy music.
No.
Folks don't know. You can find some of that over at CaptainKickass.com. I have a Bandcamp page. If you're on Bandcamp page, it's The Kickass Parody Project.
So there was a time at Bandcamp.
Yeah. And, like, I thought of myself as a comedian, as a parody artist, long before I sort of became anarchist, libertarian, whatever you want to call it, subscribed to the NAP, non-aggression principle, and sort of, you know, dove into all of that. It turns out it's been beneficial for me because of the reasons of, I'm trying to remember who it was, is there was a kingdom somewhere, and the only person who could tell the king the truth was the court jester, because the court jester did it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And made him laugh, right?
Yeah, okay.
And so, like, literally right now on planet Earth, the only people who can get away with telling you the truth are comedians.
Yeah, that barely. Actually...
Barely.
I know, and they're
shut down.
I know,
but
they're starting to get canceled.
But,
yeah.
But name another place.
No, yeah, you're right.
Right? So, this particular article that we're going to talk about hits home in that respect from a comedian perspective. One of the reasons that I'm happy to have the tag of comedian attached to my persona, you know, my online stuff, my stage name, all that kind of crap, is because of that. It's because, like, I can make art that says things that, you know, people might consider controversial.
Mm-hmm. It's not even in your official title.
What?
Comedian.
Okay, but it's listed in, like, you know, stuff that I do.
Okay.
Right?
Fair enough.
You know, nationally syndicated talk radio host,
comedian.
Heavy metal musician, comedian, parody artist, right? These are all things right. That, like, you'll find on, like, if you ever have seen one of my business cards, or if you go online, it lists all that kind of stuff.
All right. Fair enough.
And so, and I've arguably doing the parody thing maybe longer than I did, like, heavy metal music. So that's a long time.
Wow.
I started listening to the Dr. Demento show before I was actually into, like, regular music at the time, anything over the radio, the top 40, rock and roll, all that kind of stuff, because it was different.
Yep.
Right? And I was like, oh, this is funny stuff. I like laughing. Laughing makes me feel good. And so I would listen to the Dr. Demento show, and of course I'm exposed to a wide variety of different funny songs and funny artists. Most famously, of course, Weird Al Yankovic. But I spent a lot of time in the Seattle area, 22 years to be precise. And I've seen a lot of comedy there. I've seen some comedy clubs open and close. I saw one close and then reopen after, I don't know, 5 years or something
nice.
Like that. And so I was pretty happy about that. But this from Zero Hedge, Seattle Comedy Club cancels comics as SNL makes a U-turn.
That subheadline's weird. I don't. How do they go together?
I'm not sure. We'll find out.
Okay.
The thing about this that disturbs me is the comedy club canceling comics, and we'll find out just a little bit more
about
that. Well,
they've kind of been doing that elsewhere as well, right? Which is why Joe Rogan opened up his own comedy club in Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, to let
let
those comics come there and do their thing. Without fear of cancellation and reprisal.
Who was it? It was Dave Chappelle. I forget what population.
Dave Chappelle is uncancelable.
But what population? It might have been the trans community or something. There was some population that is untouchable.
No, he touched him.
Yeah, he touched him.
He touched him in ways they did not want to be touched.
But there was a huge thing where all of the, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There were a lot of people with blue hair and septum rings that were gunning for him.
Yeah, if you've watched his latest special, man, it was amazing.
Yeah, his latest special knocked it out of the park.
Yep.
But that's kind of the point, right? Like, this has always been a thing with comedians where... You know, they could either say the truth and you're less likely to be offended because it was funny, or they're able to just, those offensive style of jokes, that's just funny to most people.
Yeah, it's the point is you're supposed to laugh at this stuff. And if you don't find it funny, great, don't buy a ticket.
Yeah.
But you don't have the right to prevent other people from going and seeing this.
Yeah. Like, it's not really, to me, I don't think it's so problematic that it's going to convince people to act violently against other, like, just because Dave Chappelle makes a joke about, you know, trans people doesn't mean that people are going to start attacking them or anything like that. It's just a joke, and that's kind of where it's supposed to end.
Yep.
And if people need to learn, they can do whatever they want, but it would be more beneficial for them if they could learn to, if they don't enjoy something, to just leave it alone instead of crying about it for... You know, X amount of time.
They ought leave it alone, but I will also say that cancel culture is a market phenomenon.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, Visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
SNL's trying to be funny again? Is that...
I mean, they've been trying for a long time.
I don't know if they've been trying very hard.
They haven't been succeeding, is what's been happening.
I don't know if the U-turn's going to help then, if the effort's already in there.
Maybe if they started doing offensive jokes again, they would be funny.
Right.
I haven't seen SNL in a long time, but I just remember it being so funny.
It used to be, And they weren't afraid of anything. They would make fun of everybody.
That's like the point.
Yeah. I will say this. One of my favorite segments is the weekend news report.
Yes.
And I don't know how often they do it. But they do a segment on that where the two hosts switch jokes and write jokes for each other.
Okay.
And then they have to say the offensive joke written for them.
By the other person.
By the other person. Yeah. And they do it live. So they're just reading the prompter. And that's hilarious.
Nice. Yeah,
that's good stuff.
Yeah. I'm more of a fan of the old school, late 70s, early 80s Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
So Eddie Murphy.
Gumby.
Yeah.
Mr. Robinson.
Yes, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. That was pretty great. Dennis Miller even doing the
yeah,
Saturday
the
Night
update,
News,
yeah.
The Weekend Update.
Norm MacDonald's Weekend Update.
Yeah, he was great at that. Tina Fey was good at that. And even older than that, like Ghostbusters stuff, Bill Murray,
yep.
Right? Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, right? All those folks were hilarious, man.
And well,
Chevy Chase, even, man.
I will say this, though. There is a history of Lorne Michaels being less than fair to musicians.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, you are not allowed to perform this, and there's a handful of musicians that have been banned for the show for ignoring.
One of them is a band called Fear, F-E-A-R.
Okay.
And they were, it was John Belushi. Who, like, as he was doing loads of drugs with Carrie Fisher, discovered this band called Fear. They're a heavy metal band out of the 80s, very sort of fast and, you know, almost punk rockish, if you will, by today's standards anyway. So somehow he talked Lorne into letting them come on to Saturday Night Live.
Nice.
And they, of course, said some cuss words into the microphone. They got a bunch of, like, their people to, like, show up into the audience. And so there was this, like, I won't call it a mosh pit, but there were certainly, like, things around the stage getting thrown around and people jumping up on stage and off the stage and that kind of thing. And it wasn't the band themselves that violated the FCC. It was one of the goers, one of the fans, who, like, jumped up, grabbed the microphone and, like, said a cuss word. And then, so Fear was banned from any further performances on Saturday Night Live. It was the first and only performance of that sort on SNL.
Nice.
I just happen to know that.
But they're not the only ones that got banned.
Like, no, again, not, a handful. Not by a long shot.
Yeah. And most of it's like not just FCC stuff, but just being offensive. And,
right. Or Lorne just allowed. Didn't like them or whatever. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So at any rate, a Seattle comedy club canceled 4 stand-up comedians after angry community activists complained, according to the comedians involved. The shows at the Capitol Hill Comedy Bar purportedly offended left-wing community activists and progressive comics. Oh, go figure. The news broke as comic Shane Gillis finally performed on and hosted NBC Saturday Night Live following his termination before even appearing because activists feigned outraged at a politically incorrect bit.
Yeah. His monologue wasn't that bad either. Like, I thought it was kind of funny.
I didn't see it. So.
You should watch it.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, not bad.
I'll check
it
out.
Not great, right? But, you know.
Are you guys familiar with Dave Smith, the libertarian comedian?
Yes.
Yes. All right, so.
Quote unquote libertarian.
Well, okay.
Comedian.
4 comedians were scheduled to perform in Seattle throughout this year. Dave Smith, Louis J. Gomez, Jim Florentine, and Kurt Metzger. All are known for either being right of center or unwoke.
Sure.
The comedians say they received an email from the club co-owner and booker, Jess Anderson, who is also a stand-up comic, saying the gigs had to be canceled. The decision came after, quote, discussions with our team, investors, local comedians, and neighborhood advocacy groups, unquote.
See, sounds now, annoying.
Right. I wouldn't be in favor of this, right, but no involvement of the state. Right. That was my point before we went to break.
Yep. According to an email posted by Florentine and Metzger that was sent to their manager, Capitol Hill is known for its progressive values. Yes, it is. That's a neighborhood in Seattle. It's all very, it's the, I mean, if you want to go to a woke neighborhood, Capitol Hill, that's where you got to go.
There or San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are you saying they're comparable?
Yes. To people?
Okay.
Very much so. Yeah. So Capitol Hill is known for its progressive values, and we've received significant feedback expressing concerns about the alignment of these upcoming shows with the neighborhood's ethos. Do neighborhoods have ethos?
The community in the neighborhoods. I mean, you obviously identified it as progressive, right? So,
well, they identified it, but well, you agreed. Confirmed.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. Yes. This feedback includes concerns from local advocacy groups that are deeply embedded in our community and work towards upholding its values, according to the email. According to King 5, the Capitol Hill Comedy Bar makes comics, quote, adhere to a code of conduct which outlines expectations for respectful behavior and language, helping to create a safe and welcoming space for both comics and guests.
Sounds not funny.
Unquote.
It's a woke comedy club. It's not going to be funny.
Too funny not to immediately put on blast. Metzger, one of the comedians of the Seattle Comedy Club canceled, pointed out that the venue is located in a former Capitol Hill autonomous zone, the Chaz. You guys
nice.
Remember the Chaz?
Yeah.
That is the location where radical, violent activists took over six city blocks during the Black Lives Matter riots after the death of George Floyd.
I was kind of a fan of the Chaz, Chad thing. It wasn't successful, but, it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Am I mistaken that this club is in Seattle's historic Chaz district? Kurt looks up towards the heaven. Thank you, George Floyd, he posted on X. So there's a little bit of a tweet here from
the patron saint of Fentanyl.
Yeah, there's part of the email looks like has been posted. It says, we truly value the art of comedy and diverse perspectives it brings to our lives. It is our hope that we can find a way to work together in the future under different circumstances. In the meantime, we are committed to making this transition as smooth as possible and are here to discuss any concerns or questions you may have. Thank you for your understanding and your incredible contributions to the world of comedy. We wish you all the best in your upcoming projects and hope to have the opportunity to collaborate in the future. Jess Anderson, Comedy Bar owner and booker.
You could have ended up with a situation, what is it, the heckler's veto?
Yeah.
Right, where, you know, some right-wing guy goes onto a college campus to give a different perspective and they just shout him down.
Right.
Right, you put these comics on stage and the protesters go in and shout him down and you get no show. Right? Like, that's a thing that happens. So, as the venue operator, you got to weigh out these things. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I was thinking about it earlier today. We were at the dinner we usually have here on Sundays, and somehow George Carlin came up, and somebody was talking about how they didn't know that George Carlin had, like, clean comedy, like, before the Seven Dirty Words.
Yeah.
And he totally did. He was totally a straight-laced comedian, suit-and-tie guy, right, trying to do, you know, clean comedy. And, like, he did it successfully. He was funny at it, but, you know, he wasn't standing out from the crowd. He was just
right.
Another comedian in that crowd. And so what he did is he looked back at history. And of course, if you're not familiar with Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could say that George Carlin sort of ripped him off in that respect.
Okay.
Right. Ripped him off isn't necessarily the right term, but like Lenny Bruce would smoke on stage. He would always wear like black clothing and he was very offensive.
Yep.
Particularly at the time. He is the, as near as I could tell, the first stand-up comedian to be arrested for telling jokes on stage.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He actually got arrested and thrown in jail for telling jokes. Now, George Carlin also had an infraction at Summerfest in Milwaukee in 75 or something like that, where, like, because he told the seven dirty words bit.
Yep.
And people were offended. And so here come the cops. And there's video footage of him, you know, talking both with the cops and then later about the cops and what happened. That is, as far as I'm concerned, if you're into comedy, required viewing. But Lenny Bruce was that rebellious, like, I'm going to use dirty words. I'm going to point out the hypocrisy of, like, the state and, like, you know, humanity in general and what's wrong with mankind and that kind of stuff.
I mean, you brought up Eddie Murphy earlier. He compares, like, you know, Bill Cosby to Richard Pryor.
Yes.
Right. Both funny.
Yes.
Completely different shtick.
Right. Yeah. I would compare Carlin to Richard Pryor more so than Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
Right, just because they were more of that same era. Eddie Murphy.
Well,
was a
Eddie,
bit,
Eddie Murphy
a
made the
younger.
Comparison as far as influences in his comedy career.
Oh, yeah,
right,
yeah.
You got,
yeah.
You know, the comics before him was like Richard Pryor and Bill Cosby. Yeah. Like super clean, family friendly, and don't tell your kids.
We're going to go to a gentleman named Harrison calling from, was it Virginia?
No, I'm actually up in the Adirondacks of New York State, but I'm picking you up on a station on 1650 out of Virginia.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
Very well. Well, thank you for listening. You are live on the radio.
I've never heard the show before. This is new, and I'm rather enjoying it, although you folks are all a lot younger than I am. About every fourth word you use is like. And you refer to the 80s as old school, which amuses me to death.
Yeah, I'm the oldest one on the panel tonight at 51.
I'm the middle child at 42.
And Nikki's like
25. Allegedly.
Oh, okay. I was like 22. Okay.
Well, you probably don't like to hear this, but you're all kids from my point of view.
No, I'll take it.
Yeah, thanks, Dad.
But when I think of comedy and I think of people that I thought were funny, Danny Kaye comes to mind, among others. And I'm trying to think who Tom Lehrer was funny in the early 50s.
Oh, yeah. Tom Lehrer did some musical stuff, too, that showed up on the Dr. Demento show. So I'm familiar with him.
But the thing is, for me, comedy, first of all, in order for it to be funny, it has to have some wry basis in truth, for one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, it can't be cruel. That doesn't mean, or mean, that doesn't mean you don't poke fun and ridicule things and ideas. As a matter of fact, that's sometimes what makes it so hysterical. But I don't think it should be intentionally nasty or in some way, hurtful to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like the offense culture either. I mean, if you can't take the fire, get out of the kitchen.
Right.
Later on, my kids brought me into the orbit of George Carlin. I heard you mention him.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a kick out of Al Sleep, the hippy dippy weatherman.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had an album later that was called FM and AM. Are you familiar with it?
George Carlin? I'm sure I've heard it.
Yeah. Well, the one side of it that's called FM starts out with a skit about a particular word that he got thrown out of a Las Vegas hotel for saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the bit is so funny. You can't play it on the air, but to me it's hysterically funny. I also used to get a kick out of Shelley Berman.
Oh, yeah. Who was the comedian, the stand-up guy? George Burns is what I'm thinking of. Like,
oh, okay.
Yes, he was funny. Jack Benny was hysterical.
Jack Benny, right. What about...
Dangerfield?
How about Bob Hope?
Rodney Dangerfield. You know what I appreciated about Rodney Dangerfield?
He didn't get any respect?
Anybody who has ever had a sense of a lack of confidence or a sense that they felt a little inferior, intimidated socially by others, he gave voice to that.
Yes. He was the king of self-deprecating comedy.
Yes, and I appreciate, I am autistic, among other things, besides being ancient.
You'll love this
show. And my life was made miserable as a young person because autism hadn't even been thought of, number one.
Right.
So nobody knew what was quote-unquote wrong with me.
Sure.
And I was treated terribly. And so I really appreciate Rodney Dangerfield's kind of humor because he makes it okay for me to be me and to have experienced the things that I've experienced.
Yep. Yep.
I'm sorry he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good news is that, those guys recorded a bunch of stuff, right? Video, audio, that kind of thing.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So we're all able to enjoy things like, any of the, the comics who have passed on. George Burns, to me, only came into view when he did that that movie, the Oh God, that he starred in, where
I didn't care for that. I found that irreverent, and that offended me. I didn't want to partake. There were other things he did I thought was funny. I didn't care for that idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought I was like, really, that's a kind of a weird. Like he played God,
okay,
right? In the movie. Yeah, so spoilers for people who haven't seen it, but like I saw that, and I'm like, who's this guy? Everybody's like, but oh, he did such a, you know, he was in the, he got a lot of press for playing this part.
Okay.
Right? And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? And so I went back and found his stuff. And I'm like, oh,
well,
I'm like, this guy's funny.
Comical, because George Burns was all over the radio when I was young. And then when television came around, he was on television. And of course, his wife was Gracie Allen.
Right.
And she died rather young. And he never really got over that, but he always had a dedication to her in his shows. And that was touching to me. I appreciated him. I thought that, the Nelson family, Ozzy and Harriet, were funny.
Mm, yeah. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yes. So I found out that we have 17 speeding cameras here in Albuquerque.
That is 17 too many.
Wait. How does a camera speed?
They catch the speeders and they give out tickets. I've seen them around.
Leave the speeders alone.
Oh, I see. So the cameras aren't speeding. They're catching speeders, right?
They're stationary cameras.
Right. And they're planning to put more, but I don't know. It does not help any of the pedestrian fatalities or bicycle fatalities. We're number 6 in the nation. And so they come up with this really great plan. They're going to ticket the jaywalkers, the pedestrians jaywalking.
Yes.
I know. Is that a joke? I mean, look, I broke a comedy right now.
Speaking of comedians.
I mean, I'm not a fan of ticketing in general, but I'm also not a fan of jaywalkers, because I think, again, my general position is the 3,000-pound death machine should have the right-of-way over the meat popsicle. And if you're risking your life by being the meat popsicle, stepping out in front of the 3,000-pound death machine, you get what you get. And if you don't want to get what you get, stay on the curb until it's clear.
And also, like, people have gone to the lengths of putting in place very specific areas for you to safely cross.
Even then, you should look for the 3,000-pound death machine.
Yes, absolutely.
Not following the rules.
Right. Now, I have jaywalked plenty.
And I jaywalked today.
I will continue to jaywalk. It's just that I'm looking both ways, making sure the coast is clear before I do.
And hustle a little bit if the 3,000-pound death machine is bearing on you.
Right, yes.
It's kind of like when you're, you know, when a tractor trailer is about to crash into you, you know, you're in a rotary and maybe you have the right of way, but somebody in a bigger car is coming at you.
Yep.
You step on the brakes. Right. It's just a survival skill.
Right. It should be.
Shall we?
It should be. But the state gives pedestrians this air of invincibility and they take it.
Oh, yeah. Like in the downtown Seattle area, I can't tell you how many people just blindly step out in front of 3,000-pound death
it's
machines.
Like natural selection.
Right. Just not even looking. They're just like, yep, going to step out now. Because technically, according to the law in the Seattle city limits, pedestrians have the right of way anywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
So it doesn't even matter if you're at a crosswalk or whatever, man. If you just step out into the street, cars are supposed to slow down and
supposed
stop
to.
For you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, depending on the timing of it all, it's not always possible.
So I just came back from vacation like a week, you know, less than a week ago.
Yeah.
And I was in Hawaii, and on the roads now, everywhere that I wanted to go felt like were these new speed humps from the last time I was there.
Oh gosh.
They lowered the speed limit.
I hate those.
They put in the speed humps like everywhere.
Yeah.
And congestion is bad enough, but they've taken away lanes from where it used to be two lanes to condense it down to one to put nothing there.
Oh, so not even a bike lane
lane. Just nothing there. And I was, you know, I was lamenting to this to a buddy of mine when we were doing our own podcast. And I was like, is it really that bad? He's like, well, yeah, pedestrian fatalities are pretty bad around here. I'm like, really? You know, why? Why do they not? Like, if you're crossing like that much road, either go to where it's safer to cross, where they have a light, and then wait for the cars to stop at the light before you start your cross.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Right. But no, they put speed humps everywhere to try to save these people. Sarah?
I want to make this ridiculous point of that it's so comical that they're going to ticket the jaywalkers, because they were blaming the remember the panhandlers standing in the medians panhandling? Well, they threw them all off, the medians. I hardly see them. And then we're still number one per capita.
So how did they throw them off?
Yeah, did they out and remove them? Did they get arrested? How did they?
Yeah, they cited them. They got rid of them. It was like they're the one that's getting killed. They
good one less panhandler.
They got rid of them, and so it's the same fatality. So they're gonna ticket the jaywalkers, and we're gonna have the same kind of fatalities because, like you said, the ones with the death machines. When they make a mistake, when they run a red light, they're the ones that's killing everybody.
The IRS is going to give you a gift.
Way to bring the show down.
I don't know if I want it.
Oh, no, you don't.
Don't you?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you do.
If they're cutting your taxes.
The IRS is waving.
It's not normally what they mean.
Okay.
The IRS is waiving $1 billion in penalties for nearly 5 million taxpayers. Are you eligible?
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, the IRS is calling this a gift. The IRS calling waiving penalties for, not filing or filing late or whatever is kind of like a rapist who rapes you three times a day saying, you know what, I'm only going to rape you once a day for this week. That's my gift to you.
Consider the other two not rapes a gift.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So they're letting you keep your own money, which they had no right to in the first place, and that is their gift to you.
Right. They had no right to in the first place, and they require you to, file or, send in, money if you owe or whatever, that kind of stuff. And if you didn't, there's fines and penalties on top of that. If you don't, that's what they're waiving.
Okay. But this doesn't sound like tax breaks, right? This is waiving penalties.
Penalties and fines, not the tax itself.
Yeah.
Right.
So even less of a gift.
So they're still going to extort you, but just less penalties if you don't follow all of the rules.
Yeah, they're going to save you kneecaps, right? They're not going to send Guido and Anthony over to bust your kneecaps.
You still owe the money, but... Yeah.
Did they say why they're doing this?
The IRS is waiving about $1 billion in penalties owed on overdue taxes for the 2020 and 2021 tax years. The move will benefit about 4.7 million taxpayers, including individuals, businesses, trusts, estates, and others. The average savings per return, $206, according to the agency.
Is this like a COVID measure?
The penalty waiver stems from actions the IRS took during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Called it.
Ding, 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 ding. Give him a prize. Tell him what he's won, Bob.
Well, because if it were those 2 years, that presumably, people were having financial difficulties and they might have been understaffed at the IRS.
And this is so horribly worded, too, because this says, due to the effects of the pandemic. No. Due to the effects of the government's overreaction and near establishment of martial law across the globe, the agency temporarily stopped sending routine automated notices to taxpayers reminding them to pay overdue tax bills.
See? I never got a notice. Doesn't matter. You owe the money anyway.
Right.
Well, now they're going to walk it back a little bit.
Well, maybe.
The penalties.
To the tune of $200. I mean, that's a drop in the bucket for theirs.
For them, yes. Yeah. But if you're talking about millions of people, many of who are probably...
I'm sure they could use the $200
on the lower end of the economic spectrum.
But also, I think the majority of those people are probably filing because they bank on getting that money back.
What's their money? It's the refund.
But that's the thing. So those are the people that are filing. Normally, if they're going to get money back, not going to not file. You know what I mean? Those are the people that are filing.
If they were going to file, they'd have filed already because it's 2024 and they're only doing this for 2020 and 2021.
Yeah.
So although the reminders were suspended, the penalties continued to accrue, the IRS said.
Of course it did.
The IRS is preparing to resume its normal collection processes, including the automated notices, and the penalty waiver is part of its plans to restart. So what, now more paperwork for you to fill out? If you want to waive the penalty, you got to fill out new paperwork in order to get it?
I mean, is it worth filling? If you're already filing, it's probably worth filling out one more sheet of paperwork to get $200.
If you have already filed, yes,
right.
It would be. Since the reminder notices stopped going out, taxpayers may have been unaware that they still owed money.
Yeah.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like a gift.
Well, it's definitely not a gift. But if you if you made a mistake in your filing and you didn't know because they didn't send a notice saying like, hey, you underpaid, and then continued to pile penalties on the underpayment.
Yeah.
Right.
So the agency is giving these taxpayers a break. You qualify for the relief if you had penalties associated with overdue taxes from the 2020 and 2021 tax years. The relief is automatic relief. They're calling it relief. Yeah. You know what would relieve me the most is the abolishment of the IRS.
I just don't self-identify as a taxpayer.
Right. The relief is automatic. Eligible tax victims, taxpayers.
Yep. Say the truth.
Oh, I did. Tax victims, they don't need to take any action. So apparently no more paperwork.
There you go.
If you had penalties and already paid them, you'll also benefit. The IRS plans to issue refunds or credit those payments toward other tax liabilities. The penalty waiver only applies to taxpayers with assessed taxes under $100,000 and filed certain forms, 1040, 1120, 1041, 990T income tax returns, again for 2020 or 2021. Eligible tax victims were also already in the IRS collection notice process or were issued an initial balance due notice between February 2022 and December 7th of 2023. This is all just so, like, they already know. They already know who, you know, according to their terms, has or hasn't paid these.
Right.
And so all I got to do is just go, no, this guy gets $200 off next time.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.
If I try to secede the basement, is that not theft?